get out here, and then it should allow plenty of time for you guys to interact and ask me some questions.
But let me just give you a few things. One of the things I think that's important, just for framing up this discussion, in a pretty big picture view, is that we're working through, I think, a period of time that is trying to find a balance, maybe get a pendulum to stop swinging wildly. If you just go back maybe 15 years, when doing business as mission or tent making was kind of sprung on the whole missions world as this kind of discovery that so many unreached places, we really can't be there as missionaries. Different countries were changing whether or not how they felt about having religious workers, professional converters, you know, people that are professionally trained to come into our country and convert people and make them Western, and all those kind of associations with the idea of missions work. And so I think hopefully most of you are aware of how many mission efforts began to make adjustments that wasn't real legitimate business at first. You guys aware of that? It's kind of, you know, there's some labels for that, you know, tent faking or whatever, that kind of stuff. So you had people that just needed a visa to stay in the country, but they're basically going to do missionary work. So some countries that were new to that whole, like, they're just becoming more sensitive to having religious workers in their country. They had been doing it for a while. I think maybe the level of sophistication in keeping records even was part of allowing people to be able to basically be religious workers but get on a business visa. Just call themselves a consultant. Just start a consulting business based maybe on your bachelor's degree, or maybe not even based in that. Like, just be a consultant and not have any clients and not do any work. But the government issue you a business visa for being willing to, I don't know, have a business card and letterhead and call yourself that. So there was a lot of that, you guys, a lot of that going on. It was really big and really popular for a while. And then, unfortunately, I think largely it's been the countries themselves, the governments themselves, not approving that and being more scrutinizing that caused a helpful pressure, I think, on missions to be more, have a higher level of integrity with what they were doing in the name of business. And in being in a country, being hosted by a government on a business visa. So whether it was that pressure or, you know, for some people, hopefully we just weren't comfortable with that tension of having a business visa and not really doing business, and just from our own sense of our own heart, our own sense of integrity, started moving more towards legitimate business. Both of those pressures, you know, internal, the Lord working in our hearts, and government saying, sorry, you know, fake and phony, we're not down with that, so we're kicking you out. Some of you would remember the wave that went through Morocco, and so many businesses or people that were on business visas were sent home. And a few that were doing profitable business and had a certain number of employees were able to, you know, get through that and not be kicked out. So that this the reason I bring that up is because when you read literature on BAM or B4T or tent making or even marketplace ministries, and some of those are paralleled out into overseas cross-cultural context, you will find, I think you'll find, that some authors are still fighting that battle of trying to convince you that business is good, business is legitimate, it doesn't have to be seen as a necessary evil. There's actually good and godly value in a business itself, okay? and some books are being written from that perspective. Those often parallel just regular theology of work type discussions in a same culture context that we in our churches all across America, speaking to Americans who aren't going to go anywhere else, are just being encouraged to stop the dichotomy that your work life is something you just kind of hold your breath and get through so that after you get home from work, you can do something valuable, something spiritual, something godly. So that kind of false dichotomy that all that you're doing all day long in your workplace is all like either neutral or worse, and then getting past that, then you can do something eternal and valuable on your weekends or after work. So you've got a lot of like just theology of work discussions trying to beat down and remove that dichotomy so that people would see, no, what you do in your work life, in your business life, in your professional life is super valuable. It is how God is working through you to impact people around you. So you've got that, all of that, just meant to help the church in their own same culture context, that kind of being leveraged to help remove that problem that in the minds of many of us. So my personal story, which we don't have time for a lot of that, 25 years as a missionary in South America. So in my passport, my visa would be stuck in there, and you could see in the visa that I was a religious worker. So I was a professional religious worker. Like that's how the government would see me. And in the countries I was in, that was fine. It was fine for a while. And that's what I was. When I moved to India and I was a part of an organization that was kind of, you know, moving out of that, we're limited to only going where governments invite religious workers. And so my wife and I, our kids were already grown and married and gone. We went to India and I started a small marketing company. And I made this like this massive transition. And so people like me that were very used to a certain paradigm, you know, church planting and missions is going on in a way that I'm allowed to just do that. That's my all day, every day, 24/7. And this idea now that I've got to work in a business like all day long in order to make this thing work. And for 2 years, man, guys, I mean, that just wasn't my life. So for 2 years, I was doing about 60, 70 hour weeks just in getting my business going in North India. And you start running up against a pretty serious wall. If business is a necessary evil, that's a pretty rough thing to do for 70 hours a week. And hold your breath through all that and just try and tell yourself, that doesn't matter, that I just got to get to. And now with my remaining like 1% of energy I've got left, I can do something valuable. It's a really rough way to live out your life. So leveraging stuff coming out of just theology of work, marketplace ministries, you know, that kind of biblical perspective, super helpful for people going to do business in the missions world. But what the reason I refer to the pendulum is that I really struggle with some of the overstatement that is meant to correct the fake business thing, and it moves it way over here to where I hear and read statements that work is worship and business is church planting. And I'm like, okay, I suppose there's a way you could say all these things, but I know so many unbelievers who hate God that are working. And I don't think that's called worship, what they're doing. Work is not worship. Do you guys follow what I'm saying there? Like, work is work. There's people that do things professionally that are even illegal. But it is work, and they're doing it. Like, to make the case way out here on this extreme, work isn't worship. Work for the believer, for the follower of Christ, can be and should be an expression of our life with God. And so, yes, it can be worship, but it can't equal worship. Right? A billion Hindus working all day
purpose statement that's trying to get us away from fake business was trying and is trying in certain places that you read. It's making business like everything. So to achieve profitable business among with unreached peoples being around you, you're actually accomplishing the Great Commission, is what is starting to, is portrayed by some authors. Okay, and I don't consider that a very practical position and not even really a very biblical position to make business or commercial activity in itself somehow accomplishing the Great Commission. So inside of that, I'd just like to position us as, I'm the one that's mainly in charge in the development of our curriculum and the teaching of these courses at Radius, that where we're positioning ourselves is, and I think I've already reflected that. If you see me painting this as an extreme and that, we're not interested at all in fake business. We're not interested at all in putting families under a pressure of teaching their children how to, like, somehow talk about what dad's doing in some super creative way that some 5, 7, 8-year-old will never be able to pull off. We want the 8-year-old to be able to simply say, my dad runs an IT office. Because he actually does, right? So we are not interested in fake business. We're not interested in just like getting a visa, like have a business card and just get a visa so that now you can do, you know, 24/7 religious work. Actually, I mean, if that were possible, that, you know, that kind of defeats the whole purpose of a government saying we don't allow that. So we're not interested at all in fake business. But we're also not exalting business to say, if you've accomplished business, you've actually accomplished what you set out to do. It is a very demanding thing what we're pointing our students at. Very demanding. Requires a lot of discipline. To move through 2 languages, in some cases 3 languages, while developing a commercial enterprise is very, I mean, come on, any of you that have started businesses even in your home context, you know what it takes to do that. To accomplish that in a foreign context and not try to learn languages and plant churches is more difficult than doing it in your hometown here in the U.S. There's people doing that all the time. They're starting businesses outside of their own home context. And you can ask them, is this a little harder than it would be to do it back in Pittsburgh? And yeah, this is a little harder. All kinds of stuff I don't understand here. So I'm having to do that. I don't understand how the market works here. I don't understand so many things. And this, I blew this. This cost me 6 months because I did this wrong. And so then, if that's difficult, now add on to that. You're trying to manage your family, your marriage, your family, your team relationships, and acquire a language, and then a second language, and sometimes a third language. So it's a very demanding life that we're setting out to do, and because we're trying to be in the middle of this, not fake, but also not thinking that by simply doing business you've actually done what you set out to do. So you got to do so much more than that. That might open up some questions. This can be sort of Q&A, not just a monologuing here. So just in framing up the big discussion, any questions or comments? Anybody want to say anything? Yes?
So I agree with what you're saying, and that I've been working with businesses, missions for years, and probably the same as sending a missionary over. We send them over totally unprepared.
We have been sending them over unprepared.
Us had to do both. And it's very hard to do. Hard to do both here. I'll take exception with what you're saying about being a businessman. I can do all for the glory of God, and I touch hundreds of people in my business life, and impact many people. I can if I want to. So I think business is a great way. It's a great way to build relationships and glorify God in your business. But overseas, the people go over there with expectations, there's no financing for them.
Sure.
So there's a big need to help them be successful, because that's the only way they're going to go there, whether we like it or not, that's what it is. And I think they can be very effective as legitimate businesses, but it's very, very, it is, like you said, it is a very hard process. And it's more about how we prepare.
I hope you didn't hear me say that you felt you had to take exception with business being a fantastic way to impact people, because I really do believe it is. I hope I didn't communicate otherwise. There's a couple chairs here if you all want to sit down. Yes?
I have two questions. So one is, do we find that the business's missions, does it work better in certain countries than other countries? You know, is it, if it's more agricultural, there's kind of more, it's a little maybe easier to kind of combine that, building relationships, sharing Jesus.
Well, that's a pretty huge question. Like, are there contexts? But let me answer this part of that question. At least with Radius, and there's some agencies here, and GSI is probably, and Kevin, if you just raise your hand, Kevin's here, and Greg Allen. Is Greg in here? Greg going to be speaking in the next hour, I think, in the main session. The reason I highlight GSI is because at Radius we are very focused on unreached language groups. Okay, so for us, business and mission, we are very tiny, like narrowly focused subset inside of the massive thing called BAM. Because not only are you going to do business in a place outside of the country and where Christianity is not so popular, you're actually going to go where there's no access to the gospel. So you've now, if we've raised the bar, now we're making it almost crazy. Like, because now you're not going to where market conditions are optimal. You're not going to where business infrastructure is as well established. You're not doing a lot of optimal things you would do for profitability. So you're making it more difficult for yourself because, although inside of BAM, some would prioritize, here's my skills, here's my professional background, I could do business in this place. We're asking that question later. We're asking first, where must a church planting team locate in proximity to what people? Okay, now I've got to make something commercial happen here. So inside of the thing, so when you say, you know, are these, which places might be harder or easier or more like conducive for doing business, I think there are like countries where you find it easier to even do the legal part and the accounting part. Some countries are more friendly to that, make that easy, not so costly. Even in India, I found it in comparison with what I'm seeing other, like my daughter and son-in-law in another place in Southeast Asia. What I watch them, I keep thinking, you know, like, I would have gone crazy if I had to take all the steps that my son-in-law is all constantly taking. Whereas in India, it was pretty cheap and it was pretty fast to do the legal establishment of the business. But I think what I'd say is when you go after unreached people as the priority, the determiner of location, I think there you just have to plan on it being some of the most challenging. Again, the Lord is who we're depending on for the creativity, the opportunity, the right connection to a local person who you could end up in associating with or discovering a gap in the goods or services in a particular place. So we're depending on the Lord for that. So in the end, we're super grateful and we have all these neat stories. But looking at it from more of just a practical, I wonder how difficult it would be. I think we are shooting at the most challenging context to get it done. And like in capitalizing, like Brother was saying here, like, you know, people don't want to put money in a concept that isn't proven yet and just say, well, you'll probably lose all this, but have at it, you know. That's hard to find. Yeah.
I think people tend to be able to imagine business's mission more in an urban context. Can you give us some examples of maybe how you've seen some success in a rural context?
In rural? Yeah, well, Yeah, agriculture is working out for a number of different people, because a lot of the people groups, although there are decent-sized towns and even small cities that some of our teams are locating in and doing business in, agriculture and some type of agriculture services or agricultural innovation or enhancements do work out well among people groups that are out in the rural area. Yeah, so manufacturing is also nice, because you don't need skilled labor or educated guys. You can train them on site. Yes.
What percentage would you guesstimate of the unreached people groups are going to require an entry as a business?
Maybe 70%. There's still some unreached people groups in countries that are really happy to have, you know, Western outsiders coming in on religious visas. There's still places like that. Philippines probably has a few people groups. PNG has a load of unreached people groups. That government's super happy. They love what, you know, Christian missions has done in their country. Some South American countries still that way. Let me hit a couple more things, then we can get some more questions going. Let me see if I've already hit it. I think I'll just tell you, like, from our training of people coming through Radius. Again, we're not an agency, so we're equipping our students to go out with a variety of agencies. And I mentioned GSI is like this really excellent fit for our graduates coming out, because of the same missiology, the same unreached people grid way of looking at the world, commitment to integrity in business, not wanting to do fake stuff. But even though that is a great option for our students, we have to equip our students to go wherever their church wants to send them, and in terms of agency. So we spend a lot of time on this issue of identity. I'll just spend a few minutes on this. It's just, again, the history and where a lot of people are coming out of. Missionary is something that, it's an identity. It's the way we learn to see ourselves. Like I said, I was one of those for 25 years, and my sending church would still say, that's what I am. That's how they would understand what I'm doing. I'm a missionary. So trying to deal with, am I being honest if I'm in a country that says you can't be here at the church planter? Am I being honest when I fill out that business visa application? How do I describe myself to others? How do I see myself? How do I think of myself? And we spend a lot of time on it, because I don't find it to be a very simple thing. I find like the answer to all that to be fairly simple, but I don't find that process to be very simple of how I've always understood and how I've spoken about others. Those guys are missionaries and I'm not. And that's what they're doing and I don't. And that this kind of thing, to now say, I'm actually going to engage in all those things that only missionaries do. I'm going to learn language. I'm going to interact with people at a worldview level, discussing the claims of the scriptures. I'm going to, let's call it evangelism, just to keep standard terms going on there. I'm going to do evangelism. I'm going to do discipleship. I'm going to do church planting. Only missionaries do that. Like, that's what missionaries do. So now, I'm going in this country, and they say it's illegal for me to be a missionary. So I'm in this real quandary now. How do I see myself, and how do I talk about myself? And am I just a liar? Am I a living lie? That, you know, and this struggle. And so we spend a lot of time trying to think about this in different ways, where your own personal faith in the Lord Jesus Christ is what leads you to do many things. Even if you're a businessman in San Diego, Like, is the businessman in San Diego lying when someone says, no, he's a Christian. He's a Christian, he's an elder in his church, he's a leader in his church. The reason he took the particular job he took is because he wants to impact that place for Christ. He actually wants to build relationships and share Christ with people. And so when people on the street ask him, so, hey, what do? Oh, I'm in business in San Diego. Liar! Is he a liar? Like, we wonder. This is what we have to think about together at Radius with our students. Is he lying? Because he didn't say, well, I'm a follower of the Lord Jesus Christ, and I took a job so that I could lead people to Christ over at Parker Engineering. Is he lying when he doesn't say that? And all of you would say, no, of course. He's an elder in our church. He's an engineer. He always answers, I'm an engineer at Parker Engineering. And he's not lying. So we start with things just as simple as that. Is there a way to think about, and it doesn't remove all of the tension. Are any of our students in here? I don't think they are. At the end of the year, every year, the students roast us teachers. It's always very fun to find out what little mannerisms I have that will be exaggerated and make me feel stupid. And so, one of the things I guess I said once or more was that we cannot remove all the tension. Like, we can't remove all. So, anyway, I can hardly say that to you guys this morning because it was just a few days ago that I got roasted for the guy who imitated me. It actually was a girl dressed up like a guy. And she imitated me as so lost in this tension. Who are we? She went on so long, I was actually getting irritated. So I'm like super self-conscious right now. I want to just make really strong definitive statements, and I thought, you know, there is a tension, and then it all came out. Oh, shut up, talk about anything else, you know. But there, you can't, I don't think it can totally remove that this some degree of tension, but we try to help our people think through the fact that you can separate these things about who I really am at the deepest core of my being as a follower of Christ and the things I'm doing professionally. Like, I am in business, honestly. Oh, crap, I'm lying. No, it's like, yeah, I do. I do talk to you about it. Absolutely. I do. But I thought you were asking what I do here. I do business here. So we kind of do these mock conversations to try to help people think through how can you speak to people and speak with honesty and integrity about the fact that you are in business, yes, but you love the Lord Jesus Christ. He's actually the center of everything I do here. So talk to my Hindu employees, please, if you're really concerned about whether or not I'm doing business. Please, please, speak to him. Just ask him what we do all day long. I have had a small marketing services company. And so it was great, like strategically, on purpose, and by God's grace we were able to do this. We hired Hindus, Muslims, and Christians. And we all worked together. It wasn't big. I had 5 employees, as big as I got. I was pretty pleased with myself, having no education and no way of knowing what I was doing. That's why the 70 hours wasn't like actually like profitable. It was me learning about what in the world I'm doing in order to run this business. I had to like get ahead of my employees so I could hire them and train them and fulfill contracts coming out of Central Florida from small businesses that were counting on us to do their social media, do their web design, and develop their content marketing over there in India. Well, I could have never even said that sentence to you before I moved to India. So I had a long way to go. But what we did was I purposefully hired people that were not Christians, not saved people. Because I thought, if anybody really has to wonder about what I'm doing, and am I really doing it? I wanted unbelievers to be able to say and speak and talk about what it's like to work for me and what we're doing there and all that kind of thing. So my experience, personal experience, very limited. Being associated with many people that are out there doing that helps me. My kids doing it gives me, you know, another little view into one tiny little aspect. So some of this informs how do we try to help equip students coming through. And that is a big part of it, you guys, is that perspectives part, that identity. How am I lying? What am I? Who am I? How do I talk about these things so that I can... You know, my kids over there in Southeast Asia, they have my two little grandsons there, and their life needs to be simple and clear and easy to talk about for Keldon and Brennan. I mean, that's kind of how practical it has to be. You're not going to get them to somehow thread these subtle needles all the time on how we talk about stuff. So we try to equip our students on that side, perspectives, theology. Is it okay to share the gospel with another person and still be legitimate as a business person? Or now, must I see myself as a missionary? Is that the only label I can put on myself? Because I know deep down I wouldn't live over here if it wasn't for my desire to share with people. And so it takes time. I mean, the whole 10 months, actually, we're allowing our students to just think and work on that. And we chose in Mexico with the municipal government to establish ourselves as a non-religious educational program. We did that on purpose. We want students to be able to refer to this year on their resume, and you saw the thing, Escuela de Comunicación Transcultural is the name of our program. And we have a website with just little in Spanish and in English explaining that this is a program that helps people who are going to do business outside of their home countries learn how to acquire a language, how to understand work culture, professional culture, how to develop friendships cross-culturally. It's all this non-religious way of describing the things that our students are doing there. That they are really doing. We took the time and the money. We modeled this for them. We spent the time and the money to make it a legally registered, non-religious educational program. And so for 10 months, you guys, these are guys that, I mean, people don't think about this a whole lot before they show up. I speak with them the day before orientation starts and try to start helping them understand now how they will be speaking about the place they're at. They're not in missionary training. It's not a missionary training school. We're not missionaries. And how that's actually true and it's actually legal. And that is quite a worldview challenge for many of them showing up. Even as we add new staff, it's quite a challenge for some to kind of wrap their head around what are we trying to do there. So there's that side, and then there's business orientation, okay? And I'm trying to improve that curriculum. We're not going to go crazy there. You're not going to get an MBA by being in our, you know, it's going to be much better than an MBA. But I'm working on a curriculum. I'm talking with some people about implementing their curriculum. Just to give an orientation to entrepreneurial business and business development, business planning, orientation, okay? As someone already said, all of our graduates that go out, and any of you guys who are going to do this thing, you really do need some business partners, guys from your home church, connections that you have, that have some experience, and they say, you know what, I want to jump in on this thing with you. You really, really, really need that. You're going to have to educate them in some areas because they won't understand the constraints you're up against, where you're going. But they can help you. Sometimes it's money. But a lot of times it's just advice. Sometimes it's just like, if they would jump in, I just put this on your radar, guys. If you're going to do this thing, to view the people in your church that have been doing business as potential partners, like real team members with you. in this thing. Like, you're going to live over there. They're probably not going to move over there and live over there with you. But they could go over there a couple times a year. They could take a sense of ownership about your profitability. They could be in the trenches with you, telling you, yeah, that should freak you out. That's really bad for the business, that thing right there. But other times, it's like, don't worry about that. Yeah, that happens. That's okay. We understand that. We're in this stage right now. This is how it goes. And you're okay. Don't freak out. It's okay. We're losing money. Yes, yes. We know that. You're okay. The guys that have done business understand how long you can do that and when it's time to say, oh gosh, we need to make some adjustments here. You know, this is never going to change. So we're going to do something different. So getting some business people as your partners is another big piece. And I really feel like they can be members of that church planting team in a way. Like, really, instead of kind of relegated to, you know, like, hey, you're doing business, you must have money, you can write me a check, to like, could you invest your life in seeing the gospel actually made available in this unreached people group? Could you, as a business person, begin to see, like, you're in it just like I'm in it? Would you just talk to the Lord and you know, see what's in your heart and in your mind? But I'd love to put before you the possibility of being a true member of this thing. Like, you and me and this team, we are setting out to establish a church where it's never been done before. And the business is so important. We will not do it. There is no other way. We will not. It's not like the business is like, well, that would be cool. No, there will not be the availability of the gospel in this people group without the business actually making it. And would you jump in here with me? Would you be a team member with me? So we put that, we're trying to encourage the students to start even, you know, seeking out those guys in the church that have some experience. Start talking to them as people that will be true contributors, true team members. My daughter and son-in-law have a couple guys like that are really, really involved with them. And they take ownership of it for the business that my kids are doing. Okay, so there's a bunch of stuff questions could emerge from. Yeah.
What kind of business does your daughter and son want to do?
They're in coffee production and processing and exporting. Yeah. Yes.
Can you contrast a little bit of the business model as opposed to the traditional way of entering through medical assistance, education, or community development? And why business is, why we do business?
Okay. Good, Gail. You kind of uncovered a bias of mine. So that's very good. Because NGO type, where religious workers are not allowed, NGO type of humanitarian or development organizations are still attractive to many of these governments. Not all of them. Some governments have become very suspicious because of humanitarian work that has a very overt religious part to it, okay? Again, I think that's something that the NGOs just have to figure out how to manage. Because eventually, you as a business person in this context, you will become known as this person. That now there's this believer, there's this believer, now there's these seven families. Oh, look, they're all best friends with Ron, you know? He's always with them. So it's all going to come back to me eventually. So what we believe and what we're observing is that my commercial and professional reality is what allows me to stay despite the problem I'm creating over here by now there's these Christians. There's other things as well that protect me from that. People are very afraid of Western influence. Okay, I'll get to your question. It's kind of related to all these things. Guys, some of you know this, but some of you don't know this. Being Western is very threatening to some of these governments. What you represent, like school shootings, where's that? That's America. American kids love killing each other. Like, that's pornography. Where's that come from? Immodesty, immorality, children that don't respect their parents. A country where young people don't respect people that are older than them. It's not an automatic reflex in America for a young person to just bow and move out of the way because a person older than them is walking by. So Western is also equals Christianity. So Christianity brings school shootings, pornography. Some of you guys know this. Some of you guys might be shocked by that. But when you're bringing Christianity, you're bringing filth, garbage, anarchy, terrible morality, like that. We don't want that. So another thing that that will protect us is you make sure you're actually not bringing Westernism. You're a person that you're actually not like a patriotic American. Like, that's not what you're over there. It's how awesome it is to be an American. Like, hopefully you start to realize how awkward it is to be an American. You start to realize, yikes, this is a pretty bad reputation over here. I've lived in countries like that, and I became Dutch because my dad always said I was 100% Dutch. My mom always wondered, how did that happen? But don't we count? Then my daughters became 100% Dutch. My dad declared all of this. So my wife was also out. Everybody's out. We're just Dutch. So I had a clear conscience telling taxi drivers, I'm Dutch. And I talk about Americans as those people.
That's convenient.
It's very convenient. Very convenient. So the thing on the NGO, even though some governments are a little bit suspicious or very suspicious about NGOs, and they're making it more difficult for people to launch and establish new NGOs and bring personnel in under NGOs, it is still a very viable option. I feel like asking you, Kevin, like, you know, all of GSI, do you have, like, are there some NGO efforts at all in GSI? Are you guys all
very low? We're finding a lot of the countries we're going to, governments are wise to NGOs, and they don't allow you to go in as NGOs anymore. Business pretty much totally.
That creation of employment and stuff is so huge. You know, if you can create a few jobs, man, does that... I mean, NGOs can create jobs too, but there's just... Commercial activity is something the whole world relates to, and it does. Yeah, a lot of the suspicion drops off. Okay, there's lots of hands, you guys. Yeah.
For some young people in here, what are the degrees you're suggesting to give when they go to school? And then how do you evaluate what kind of business you're going to create? How many of you're going to go in different countries? I know in different countries you're going to have different things, but the degree for...
If you're not too far down the road in your college coursework already, I like business degree. I really do. I feel like it gives such a great background. And if it's a good program where you can actually intern while you're getting that degree, so you get some work experience, I love that. If a guy's too far down the track, it's like, do well, finish well, you know, whatever you're studying, just the fact that you've completed a bachelor's degree, you've learned some skills that will be helpful. And then maybe just hold it loosely, the fact that you've always wanted to work in a particular sector. Just be a little more loose with that. Because once you prioritize, what I really want to do is plant a church among non-reached people group, you might find, well, I'm starting a business. This is a little different. I'm going to need some extra training. But so, yeah, business. It's great. If you haven't done it, if you haven't done your college work yet, I think that's a great place to go. Yes? The four-year degree makes such good sense to the government immigration offices that are evaluating your visa application to have a bachelor's degree. I'm so used to thinking about Asia, all of Asia in this, and it's like kind of strange that someone that had not completed a bachelor's degree would be applying for a business to start a business in our country over here. The exception to that is you have work experience. You didn't get your bachelor's degree, but you went into some sector and you've got some professional experience. So that sells on the resume. It makes very good sense. It's intriguing to Asians. Like, how did you do that? Like, you got a job and you didn't get a bachelor's. It's all very different for them to think that through. But yeah, it's super helpful, and it makes sense to have that bachelor's degree. Yes?
Kind of piggybacking off of that, do you have recommended experiences or skill sets that you would want, that you think would be helpful for young people or anybody considering going overseas and starting a business to gain? Or does it really depend on, like, where you're going and who you're going?
Well, like, yeah, there are a few things that are always on my mind. One is, again, to intern with someone that's in a startup phase or early in their business. Just excellent. If you can get a job with someone that's doing that, they're in that stage, and that would allow you to poke around and ask a lot of questions and learn about just that sense of managing risk, of doing, like, I don't know. This is what I know. What I don't know is this. And to see how people manage that, you know, some people don't. And consequently, they just look for employment rather than if someone else has done all the risky part. But these guys that are in the startup phase, like, how they manage all that, it's just excellent experience. So any kind of work that gets you in an early stage. Some guys, maybe it's a business they've had for many, many years, but they still know how to think about that, talk about that, and orient you to how I got to this place. That's, you know, that just as valuable. So it's that kind of work experience. I also think, like, managing spreadsheets and understanding something, yeah, about the bookkeeping side, a great skill to have. You know, if it wasn't part of your education, you know, to maybe get some kind of training in, the record keeping, bookkeeping, accounting side of this, it just kills a lot of us. And we end up looking for someone that knows how in the world to make that formula do what it's supposed to do on the spreadsheet. So that's a couple things. The bookkeeping side, and then just business planning side. A couple of really helpful skills. Yes?
So this might not be a relevant question considering Regis' kind of focus on unreached groups, but do you find, maybe you could answer this as well, people who go over there and then actually get a job at a business that's already there?
Yeah. Now that's what technically is called tent making now. So you take your profession, and you take a work contract somewhere overseas. And so there's a whole world of tent making out there, whole associations of people that are aware of job postings that are taking those kinds of jobs. So that'll be usually an English language environment where you wouldn't get hired. And so if you're trying to do what we're trying to do, sometimes a work contract is what you need to do. There's no other way to get in and get started while you're learning language. So it's kind of like trying to start your own business in terms of the time commitment. Because you're in that office doing work for those guys for 40 hours a week at least. And so you're trying to do language acquisition on the side and in addition to that. So it often, taking a work contract doesn't put you exactly where you want to be, but it's not a game stopper. If that's the best way you can get started in a country, you're going to learn a lot about the culture by just working. And if you've got the discipline and the commitment and some of the tools, the skills, how do I acquire a language without being part of the Language Institute, which is what we train for there at Radius, then you can be acquiring language while you're fulfilling your work contract. So you could take maybe a 2-year contract thinking at the end of that, I will be at a certain level of language, and I will also have been evaluating, like, people group situations and market situations, so that you could say, I think I know where I need to move toward, and I have a business concept that I could start. Yeah, some of us, man, you guys, I won't keep just harping on GSI, but that's all they do would be taking a person with that set of questions and saying, okay, what country are you going to look at?
and we can walk you, we can help you through that. And if a work contract with the leaders of that field, and they're like, yeah, that is a good way to start here, they would, I mean, they're ahead of you on that, telling you later while you're doing that, well, here's the people, next people group, we want to put personnel near this one. And even people thinking about business gaps and potential markets over there. So to do it completely on your own, like, it's pretty challenging anyway. So, yeah, just throw that out there. Yeah.
Can you tell me what GSI is?
GSI. I'll let Kevin say what GSI is.
GSI is Global Serve International, and we line up very closely with Radius. So we do target unreached people groups, and so that's where what the reps for our businesses are going to be. We do have guys on the field, and like Ron's saying, even in the country that his children are in now, we're doing work there to make it easier for the next group coming in. So we're sending them to GCS. And so we work with, they train them, and we take them, you know, very well trained and put them some pieces. So.
Yeah, it's all they do. I mean, so they would require some kind of training, like ours. If you apply to them, they would like you to have this kind of training so that you've got a head start, and then they take you from there. And really, to them, your success is all that they're there for. Like, how do we get you to that thing you're hoping to do in your life? You've seen the Great Commission. You understand that these unreached people have to have access to Christ. They have to know who he is and love him and worship him. But these people are located in governments where I can't just go as a religious worker. And well, that's why these guys pooled all their resources and professional backgrounds and making that available. Yeah.
Just wondering if having a business established can eliminate some of the need for raising support through an agency.
It can. I think what I like to say to people is to the kind of the first, and we'll have to finish with this. The first level to aim for in terms of like minimum requirement that I think to avoid being a fake business is to reach like cash flow positive, even if it's only enough to give yourself a very tiny salary. Not what you can live on. You can't live on it. But like as a minimum, to keep working, don't be satisfied with, well, I just drain about $2,000 a month. To keep this up. Now, you know, you basically got an NGO at that point anyway. You're just like, doing this thing. So if that's coming back up, that's fine. So you're, you know, $2,000 a month going in the wrong direction. Now it's only $1,500, so we're moving in the right direction. So bare, like, minimum requirement, I think, to aim for is that your employee, your revenue, whatever you're producing and what you're charging for it, is actually paying for itself, your infrastructure, your leases, all your salaries, and then you just keep working until there could be something there, even if it's just a little bit to pay for yourself. Then the next level would be to pay yourself the equivalent of what a local salary would be to cover what you're doing to get to that place. You probably won't live on that either. Like, that's what they consider in that place a living wage, but you probably being an expat, needing to do all these other kinds of things. Because I think if you look at, I want this to pay my full salary and to no longer need the support of people, I think that's one of those areas. Man, I know how this is interpreted by some people, but I feel like that's something that if that happens, fine. But I'm not sure I can make that my goal, because I've got so much I've got to do, and I've sentenced myself to some pretty bad conditions by putting a priority on this people group here. So I'm in this place that isn't optimized for my profitability. I've got to ship too far, for example. So my competitors are right here, right at the port, and I'm here. So I'm paying thousands to get my product over there. So I like to tell people that that's almost like if it happens, almost happen to do something that really grows. It just really takes off. Without tons and tons and tons of extra time for you, it's taking off. You could end up with your full salary covered. But I would not make it necessarily what I aim for. I think I'd have to say, and I know some of the pure business B for T guys, I've been working very closely with some of them over the years, they would say, Ron, you just sold the whole thing down the river by letting go of that as an explicit goal. But maybe what I see more clearly than they do is to actually plant a church among an unreached people group. That's what I have to accomplish. And it's just gonna take so much of who I am. Like, what I'm worried about when I fall asleep and what I worry about when I wake up in the morning can't always be my business growth. It's gotta be these people that I'm in charge of discipling. So, all right, we've run out of time. Thanks for coming, you guys. We'll see you downstairs.